argument is Locks versus CDA. Mr. Shapiro.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Craig Shapiro, and I'm arguing this morning on behalf of the appellant Jeffrey Locks. The single appealed claim stems from a letter that the debt collector, CDA, sent to Locks regarding a debt that he was unable to pay because he was out of work due to a workplace injury. In that letter,
this lawsuit, $237? What is there statutory damages, aren't there? It's not a class action, is it?
No, it is not. It was an individual claim, Your Honor.
What is he asking for?
He's asking only for statutory damages.
How much is that?
It is up to $1,000.
How much?
Up to $1,000.
$1,000. Do you really finance a federal litigation when... I don't get it. He's going to get $1,000 and he still owes the $237, doesn't he?
Correct, Your Honor. The amount of the debt and...
He ends up with at most $763?
That is correct, Your Honor.
What's the point of suing for that? You must be charging him more than $763, no?
Your Honor, that, as you probably would guess, that would not be a very...
Pardon?
That would not be a workable scenario for most attorneys, which is why Congress had the wisdom to include a fee-shifting provision in the FDCPA. And courts nationwide have recognized that the...
You get a fee from the defendant.
Correct. And courts nationwide have recognized that the FDCPA is primarily enforced by private attorneys general as opposed to the FDCPA, who also has enforcement powers. In this case, Your Honor, CDA stated, you have the right to pay this claim now. To avoid further steps, respond within 48 hours. Consider our client's lawful alternatives. Our client may take legal steps against you, and if the court awards judgment, the court could allow court costs and attorney's fees.
So your point is that there's interorum effect from that last part of the sentence, because as a rational person, he thinks he's risking court costs and attorney's fees, whereas the only thing that could make that accurate would be to say the court cannot allow court costs and attorney's fees. Does that summarize...
Yes, I would distinguish the court costs, because I believe court costs could be recoverable, but the attorney's fees, which, of course, is the more significant amount.
Be forced to pay attorney's fees if a court found that the suit was vexatious, frivolous, bad faith, what have you, right?
Correct. Your Honor, it doesn't say any of that in this letter. And in this letter, what it states is that if the court awards judgment, then the court could award attorney's fees. And under the facts that are present here, as well as the American rule, a court cannot award attorney fees as part of a judgment regarding this debt against Mr. Locks.
Well, you're saying it has to be more than just the judgment to warrant the award of attorney's fees.
Correct, Your Honor. And CDA limits the language in this letter to stating if the court awards judgment, then the court could award attorney's fees. And our position is that the court cannot award attorney's fees. The defendant places some emphasis on...
Why didn't he pay the fee? I don't understand that. Why didn't he pay the $237?
Because, Your Honor, the injury was caused by a third party, and he expected the third party to pay. Also, he was out of work at the time and was simply unable to pay. It wasn't...
Out of work?
Today?
Yeah.
You mean, frankly, Your Honor, I don't know if he's still out of work. I know that he was working at Caterpillar for some amount of time, but I don't know if he remains there.
Just idle curiosity.
Sure. And, Your Honor, the courts have widely accepted also that the amount of the debt and basically everything regarding the debt itself, other than the nature of the debt, it must be a consumer debt, are irrelevant to whether there's liability under the FDCPA. Your Honor, the defendant argues that the only thing that matters here is if they stated that the court would award attorney's fees as opposed to could. This is not a would versus could argument. It's could versus could not. As I stated before,
Well, that's what I said. I mean, your point is that if he thinks he's risking a liability in the future beyond his $250 medical debt or whatever it was, that in enough is to make it a misleading statement if he is, in fact, not risking that in the future.
Correct. CDA is volunteering false legal information to the unsophisticated consumer. This isn't a situation where it's just merely some technical mistake in a statement or some miscategorization of an amount of money like credit card interest versus credit card principal. It's nothing like that. We have a debt collector that, for reasons unknown other than it wants to convince him to pay now instead of later, it says to him, a court could award attorney's fees against you, and that simply is not true. This statement was made to induce payment. That's what the debt collectors are in the business for. They need to collect payments, and that's what all of their language and their letters is meant to induce. And it's unfair, if anything else, for a debt collector to volunteer false legal information solely to induce payment from the unsophisticated consumer. Now, I'd like to touch on materiality, which is a requirement that this court has for these types of claims. I submit that falsely stating that nonpayment could result in attorney fees awarded against the consumer is material. If the debt collector claims that nonpayment could result in additional monetary liability in the future, and that is actually false, that is material. Like I said before, the only reason they're doing this is to try to convince Locks to pay the money. And if you're, as you were saying before, if...
Well, what if you received a Dunning letter like this, and you know better? So would you be able to sue also?
You mean in my capacity as a consumer or the attorney?
As a consumer.
Your Honor, it gets a little more sticky there, but these types of claims are analyzed under the unsophisticated consumer standard.
Yeah, but what's your answer? I don't understand. A Fair Debt Collection Practices lawyer, you received this Dunning letter about collection of attorney's fees, award of attorney's fees, and you know it's ridiculous. So could you bring the suit?
Well, first, I think it would not be prudent for me to bring that lawsuit. However, sitting right after I got my mail...
Yes or no, and then you can explain your answer.
Because it truly depends on the facts.
Well, I gave you the facts.
Well, Your Honor, there are additional facts that are relevant to this question, though, and that is whether a court could award attorney's fees to me or not.
Well, you just said the court can't. That's what I'm saying. So you get this letter. You know that it's false, that they can't get attorney's fees, that the debt collector can't get attorney's fees. So my question is whether you could bring this lawsuit, even though you were not deceived.
You're not.
Why don't you just say you're not an unsophisticated consumer?
Well, that's the first part, is that, number one, I'm not an unsophisticated consumer. But I think that the question you're really asking
goes to... Or you could just
to,
say yes. You know, it's an unsophisticated consumer approach, but whatever else you want to add...
That's exactly
maybe
it.
Maybe there's some other reason why it would be foolish. I don't know what those reasons would be. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Sure. Your Honor, yes, I could bring that claim. However, my guess would be that when the court awarded statutory damages, it would go less.
What he's arguing is that he ought to present evidence that he's unsophisticated. Your client.
Your Honor, he's not an attorney. He doesn't have legal knowledge.
Well, I know that, but there's not the class of sophisticated recipients of debt collection is not limited to lawyers, presumably.
That's correct. I think the majority of...
Debt collector, right?
But is there a rule of law that you've got to get down to that level of personal detail of each consumer? I'm actually surprised this company isn't jubilant that this isn't a class action, because all we're talking about is Mr. Locks, but that's a different matter.
I'm really asking you about their contention, which is that there has to be evidence that the plaintiff was an unsophisticated consumer who was or might be deceived by this. I wonder if you agree that that's a requirement of the law.
No, Your Honor. This is an objectively false statement. This is not a confusing statement. This is not something
So your position is it's an objective test, not a subjective test for each consumer recipient.
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm saying in this situation we have an objectively false statement. This isn't a statement that can be interpreted one way or the other. It's objectively
but
false.
But you might have an objectively false statement that no one believed.
That's correct. This is an objectively false legal statement.
Suppose they say, if you don't pay this debt, we're going to cut your heart out.
I would not represent a consumer that wants to bring that claim. I don't think that would be prudent either. But
well, even an unsophisticated consumer is going to know that's a disproportionate penalty. What if it said, if you don't bring this lawsuit, we're going to get the sheriff to put you in debtor's prison?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what this letter. This is the same thing as this letter. It is something that I think the unsophisticated consumers out there do not know.
Debtor's prisons anymore?
Oh, Your Honor, actually, there have been several media reports recently about debtor's prisons that result more from not just simply not paying your debt, but from violating court orders during the collection process.
Actually,
things
that's
like that.
True. Support orders.
But, Your Honor, this is a legal question that they're volunteering false legal information in order to induce payment. This isn't a situation where it's something that could be interpreted one way or the other. The unsophisticated consumer simply does not know that this is a false statement. The unsophisticated consumer can only read it as for what it says, and it says that a court could award attorney's fees against the unsophisticated consumer as part of the judgment, and that is simply not true. There's no question of whether there's some unsophisticated consumer out there that's going to have the requisite knowledge. They're unsophisticated.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Shapiro. Mr. Schultz?
May it please the Court, Counselor. My name is David Schultz. I represent the Appellee CDA. It's plaintiff's burden under the Fair Debt case under Section E to prove that the letter was false. But it's not just that.
And the letter is plainly false because the Court can't allow attorney's fees just simply upon awarding judgment. We don't follow the English rule. And we've used an objective test. We didn't say the least sophisticated consumer on the planet because our Court thought that was too extreme, but we adopted an unsophisticated consumer test, and I'm not aware of any case that says you have to, you know, go run an IQ test and perhaps an experiential test on every plaintiff.
Correct. But the test isn't just that it's false. As this Court has said a number of times, including every case that Your Honor wrote, that it has to not only be false, but it has to deceive and mislead, and it has to be material.
Yeah.
Now, Judge Gorman actually disagreed with you, and he said it wasn't false. If you look at the letter,
though, unless it said cannot award attorney's fees, it's false because what Judge Gorman was focusing on is whether right this minute you're going to have to pay some attorney's fees, not whether there is a risk in the future. And I don't think he was focusing on the risk function and the interim effect that would have.
But then, if you get to the question of whether or not this statement is misleading somehow, going to confuse or mislead them. The three most important people who have considered this case, other than obviously the three judges here, are Judge Gorman, the plaintiff, and the plaintiff's lawyer. And if you look at their behavior and look at what they've said and what they've done, it does not rise to that kind of level. Obviously, Judge Gorman saw it one way as saying this is extremely conditional language. And if you look at it in context of the letter is very clear.
I don't think it is conditional. It's just an if-then clause. If judgment, then attorney's fees, and it doesn't strike me as at all conditional in that sense. And given the status of lawyers, I'm sorry to say, in the eyes of much of the public, they probably think they're off there collecting huge fees all the time and don't want to be liable to pay them.
Okay. But can it mislead or confuse anyone? If you
sure.
put it in context, you sit there and say, well, the plaintiff testified it didn't, actually. It didn't confuse them or mislead them.
But that doesn't matter. If it's a misleading letter, it's a misleading letter. And actually, I think there's some issue about whether the statement from the deposition that you guys have quoted several times was somewhat taken out of context. By the time he gets to the deposition, he's presumably had a chance to talk to his lawyer. At the time he received the letter, things might have been quite different.
Yeah, they raised that in their reply brief.
Yeah,
there's that comment. But if that was the case, in the deposition, what they should have done is rehabilitate him on those matters and say, is that something you learned as a consequence of our discussions? They didn't do that. In fact, if you look on page 38.
The question is whether there's a genuine issue of material fact right now that requires further proceeding. in this case. And it seems to me that what they've pointed out is that the context of the questioning was very much in the present tense. So I'm not sure that this is so clear.
Well, you just said a second ago, if it's misleading or misleading, we got to know that, and there's some way to prove that, and he didn't present any such evidence.
You weren't making some fancy argument about the Alyeska exception to the American rule.
I think if you look at it in context and see what they're saying here is, you can pay this now, there's other steps that can be taken.
And if the court awards judgment, the court could allow attorney's fees, and the only thing that makes that a true statement is if you insert the word not.
And so then you've got to look and see whether, right, then you've got to look and see whether that's going to confuse or deceive, mislead the unsophisticated consumer. We have no evidence of that. That's part of their problem. That's their burden.
One of the sub-questions in this case is whether you need to go out and do an expensive consumer survey or whether some things that are just so flatly wrong are capable of being read and evaluated by themselves.
Right, and we tried those cases with just
what
the plaintiff.
What would you expect a consumer survey to show?
I think they'd have to determine whether or not...
What would you expect the results to be?
I don't think they'd read this to say that there's...
What would the consumers say? You'd show them this and you'd say... what would you say? Do you think that if a judgment were entered against you, a court could award attorney's fees? Is that what the question on the survey would be?
I'm not sure if it would be that or if it would be reading this compared to another version of the letter without some of that language. Are you misled to believe that there are going to be a judgment with attorney's fees entered against you? And I don't think that that's the way it's going to be read. That's not how the plaintiff read it.
I don't understand you.
Well, you'd have to have this letter.
No, you'd say to the consumer, do you think that if you're sued by the debt collector, you may have to pay the debt collector's attorney's fees? Wouldn't that be the simple question on which to base the survey?
I'm not sure that's the question that would be asked the way the survey people would
Why
do
not?
It. Well, in most of those cases in which they've had surveys, and we've had five or six up here before, Your Honor, the way the experts seem to do it is they have this letter, and then they have another version of it that's cleaner for that, and then they would ask.
Because they deal with their ambiguous statements. All right, suppose you have two letters, and one says what your letter said about the attorney's fees, and the other says simply... If you don't pay, you may be sued and ordered to pay.
Okay, tonight it's possible.
And don't you think most consumers would say, well, the first letter means that I can be sued and I might have to pay attorney's fees?
It's possible to say that.
What other interpretation would be possible?
It's possible to say that, but we don't know that because he never did the survey.
But use your head. What could a rational person say other than what I just said? That this means that if I get this first letter, it means I might have to pay attorney's fees. What else could a rational person offer as an interpretation?
That is a reasonable interpretation, perhaps. I don't know, because nobody did a survey, and they were told to do a survey, or some other evidence. But the evidence we do have...
What would you think if you read it?
I think the way Judge Gorman thinks, frankly, that it's way too conditional, the way it's phrased here. There's so many other statements up until that point.
But the condition can never occur. Even if the judge you cite says it's conditional... You've got to presume that that's a possibility. A condition can occur.
But it's not,
so it can't be conditional if it can't occur, Mr. Schultz.
But it's got to rise to the level of misleading them, to confuse them, to deceive them, and to something
that's
got to be material.
You know, as against a minimal amount of money, the suggestion of attorney's fees, right. I think the average consumer would think is pretty substantial.
I don't know. Judge, you wrote the Zemeckis case 2 weeks ago, and it had very, very similar language in there. It talked about how they had to call now, take action now, do something today. Our client could pursue legal action. That's quite different
from a concrete statement that if there's a judgment, then there'll be these very extensive attorney's fees. I don't think the earlier decision of this court was about this question.
We did have it, there wasn't really a dispute as to the facts here. We submitted these to Judge Gorman on cross motions for summary judgment. They didn't present any survey evidence. They presented a testimony
but
of the plaintiff.
Judge Posner is saying, what's the survey going to show you? You don't need a survey if it's pointless.
Then you didn't need a survey, and you presented it to the finder of fact, as we did here, Judge Gorman, both sides, not a dispute. He ruled the way he ruled. The plaintiff didn't support the theory, and I think if you look at the way the case was litigated, they don't really support the theory. This parsing this little part of the sentence out was never part of the case. It wasn't part of the original complaint.
Look, it would be so easy for your company to fix. All you'd have to do, if you insisted on having this letter, and say, if the underlying agreement or the law of the jurisdiction allows, there might be, I mean, some sort of, because, of course, had it been in the agreement in this case, we wouldn't be here, undoubtedly. But you could lard it up with enough extra things that you wouldn't really even have to do much. And your later letters didn't have this misleading language. So it's a very easy fix for you.
I don't know
why you're going to the mats over your $1,000 either.
How many of these letters were sent?
CDA is not a real big company in Central Illinois. I don't know exactly. I would guess there's at least a few hundred of them. It's a letter they've used for a while. They had used for a while. Nobody had ever challenged them on it before. I think it is conditional. You could make the letter better with more conditions, but it is conditional
but
already.
It's not
there are the reasons.
Meaningful, as Judge Flom said, if the condition can never happen, it's not a valid conditional letter.
It's a form letter.
It has to have been able to happen.
It's a form letter. You know, in some instances, it could happen.
If judgment
in some it doesn't.
Is awarded against you, we're going to send you to the moon. You know, well,
I think we're parsing it and focusing on this. When if it was that important, it should have been mentioned in the complaint, and it wasn't. It wasn't an amended complaint. It wasn't a discovery. The plaintiff didn't support it. It's an extremely conditional statement. They didn't present any further evidence to support that. We submitted this on cross motions for summary judgment. There's really no dispute on the facts, and a reasonable finding was that it did not violate it. And if you look at the case law, you have to say, in the Ruth case, it's the only reasonable conclusion. You have to say the only reasonable conclusion is that the unsophisticated consumer is going to be deceived, not just that it's false, it's going to be deceived somehow. He took no action. Nobody else would have taken an action.
Right.
Thank
Your
you.
Your time has expired. You don't want to say anything more, do you? No. Okay. Court will be in recess.